Brock will be.
That's right. He just sent a message saying he's just setting up now. Good evening, everybody. We run a very professional unit here. Welcome to Big Footy Tiger Cast Monday night. Hope you're all doing well, given the weekend that's transpired. But yeah, a bit of a low key evening tonight. Not too much has happened in the way of media, but no, I'm sure we will get to all that shortly. But EJ, welcome from Groupies Dungeon. Thank you for getting Wi-Fi access to jump on tonight.
Grand style. In a Brunswick and a Panther Road.
Pretty much, yeah.
To present to you Il Modernissimo, a forwards, a smalls, a talls, a backs. Why don't you come for yourself? Just a 27 first round draft pick, and you can have the choice.
That's pretty much it in a nutshell. That could have been the promo for the show. That would have been unbelievable if we had just rolled that one out on the socials. Oh, dear.
I got the Dodoro covered.
Dodoro, yes. Jeez, it wouldn't be hard to have him covered. My goodness. He's hanging up the boots, though, isn't he?
He is.
He's got the arse or something? Yeah, that's not good. That's a sad day. It's a sad day for footy that Dodoro's getting the arse. Oh, there we go. Thank you. 7,289 days for Essendon people, just for anyone who was wanting to do the math on that. Grock, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Sorry, I was late. Had to set things up again. Bloody technology with the microphone drivers and everything. It's just a nightmare.
That's all right. I think I'm going to have to download this episode and clip that start and post that a few places, EJ. That was quite good. We'll have to lead with that somewhere. No Tiggs tonight. He's got a splitting migraine, so he is out for the count. CB's a bit busy, but we do still have some bits and pieces to go on with, I suppose. But yeah, given the eventfulness of this evening, should we do that first or the game first? Should we just get the game stuff out of the way?
Yes.
And just get it to one side. Just sweep it under the carpet. We'll do the game first. Hawthorn knocked us off by 63 points, 19-17, 131 to 10-8-68. Yeah, wasn't a pleasant game to be at, I can assure you. Sitting behind the Hawks cheer squad was not fun. The first quarter was painful to watch. They made us look pedestrian-like. It was actually quite scary to see how easily they were moving the ball. Even though we kicked the first goal and Mansell got that first goal, there was just that small part of me that's like, maybe, are we a chance? And then it got slashed pretty quickly. But I thought the middle two quarters, we weren't too bad. We sort of peaked it back a little bit. But Hawthorn was obviously just far superior for most of the day, EJ. But goal kickers, Jackie Gunston got off the leash and got 5. Watson, 3. Deer, 3. Bolton, the best for us, with 3. Warple, 2. Dylan Moore, 2. Mansell, 2. Bolter, 2. Hugo, Ralph Smith, and a few other, or Hopper and Graham with some individual goal kickers as well. Jaden Short led the way with 29 disposals. But EJ, what was your take on the game?
First of all, my take on the game is Bolter is not a forward. Oh, I just don't know why we keep playing in there. It just pisses me off. It's so hard to watch. He's such a natural down back. Running, I mean, he's so athletic, he gets away with it and he snagged a couple of goals, but he doesn't lead at the right times. He runs under the ball. It's so frustrating. The first quarter was painful and I nearly switched off. But I'm glad I stuck with it. There's a few senior players that look to me like they're just collecting their check and it's really hard to watch. It's really hard to watch. But there's a few that are putting in the requisite effort and, you know, some of the kids, another good game from Ralph Smith. He was good again.
I liked his game. Yeah, good call.
Yeah. I mean, like, I know he's not the most talented bloke, but give me a team full of Ryan Mansells because he has a crack every week and he gives a shit and he wants it. And that, for me, is what's important. I can see, you know, like, I know I've had a running sort of a discussion on Twitter about Camden McIntosh, who picked up 11 disposals in 34% game time, which was a stack more than a bunch of people and a similar amount to people. The next lowest game time was Coulthard with 51%. Then it was 74%. So in less than half the game time, he's lapping these blokes. look, we know he's not the most skillful bloke, but he has a crack. And I'd rather have the young kids learn off someone who gives a shit, even if they make mistakes. It's actually okay to make mistakes because you learn that that's not the be-all and end-all, but not putting in 100% effort is the inexcusable bit. And I was watching people jog alongside plays, and I can't believe I've still got a screen that isn't broken. Anyway, rant over. Sorry.
No, perfectly fine. Grok, what else? What was your take, mate? Anything to add on top of EJ's?
The biggest disappointment for me was our midfield in that first quarter. I mean, you had Prestia, Taranto and Hopper in there, starting three midfield, and there was absolutely no pressure on the Hawthorn clearances straight from the tap out. The way that, I mean, I could excuse it a little bit if we had someone like McAuliffe, Sonzi, you know, those C-string fourth or fifth midfield. But to have your first stringers, your A-grade midfield, your top liners in there, and for them to be that uncompetitive, that's a disgrace. That is something that seriously needs to be addressed this week. Heading into the Gold Coast game, and yes, there's 1 week left in the season, but it looked like they just checked out in that first quarter, like they just couldn't be bothered putting the pressure on. Normally, we do have that defensive midfielder coming from the defensive side of the contest to stop those quick clearances, but it appeared we were going a lot more attacking in the setup, hoping to win the tap out, and Nank didn't get anywhere near the hit outs that he normally would. So we're on the back foot from that defensive setup anyway. I thought Hugo had a really good game, another ripping one for him. But yeah, again, it's just a case of the younger players are the ones that are stepping up, and they're being let down by the older players. I mean, Jack Graham with the 50, Nank with the 50, just undisciplined players there. But I agree with EJ. I'd much rather make mistakes trying to manufacture something than these constant safe little, you know, 25 meter kicks or the 5 meter handballs that we consistently miss trying to go sideways or backwards. It puts us under immediate pressure. If we're trying to get the ball forward and we turn it over, yeah, fair play. You know, it is what it is. But to do it under no pressure and missing 5 meter handballs to players with no one on them, just simply missing the target, it's just not good enough. But yeah, I thought Tresias and Bauer were solid for the games that they played. Obviously, they're coming in and they've been a bit underdone through injury and they haven't had the exposed form at AFL level. But I think, again, it's one of those ones where there's more positives from our younger players than there are questions on the senior players at this point.
I will excuse a couple of senior players. Brody and Vlosten have been pretty good down back. And I know it was a brain fade on the weekend, but Nags had a real crack this year. And Rioli obviously has been good. But apart from that core of senior players, there's a lot of senior players I think should have a real good hard look. And there's a couple of long contracts there that I look at now and I just shake my head.
Yeah.
They're not short contracts, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. No.
They're long contracts.
I mean, I think we can all but call that Coulthard. I think he's gone. That was his last chance. Yeah, I think it's just bad game.
You mentioned the handballs. That was the one thing that I was almost smashing my head against the chair on while watching. The amount of handballs that we put to the players' feet instead of to their advantage, even just somewhere remotely between the waist and neck, would have been suffice to give them half a chance to grab the ball. But we actually kill a lot of our own momentum just by basic fundamental skill errors. Handballing to the ground, it completely stuffs. Like, the ball doesn't bounce always the right way for you, so handballing it, you know, on the deck is not a wise move. I'm sure they didn't mean it, but a lot of these weren't even when under pressure as well. And that was probably the alarming thing for me. Is we weren't even able to connect a chain of three or four handballs together that were clean. And it's like you're not going to penetrate and break down anyone's defense if you can't do that. And that was once a very good skill of ours. But yeah, it's just the chains of handball were shocking. And we were kicking to outnumbered contests as well. I think there was one point we kicked down the line to Sicily and someone else who were outnumbering our forwards. I'm like, I just don't know what they're looking at. But it was frustrating for a lot of it. The kickouts, the back pocket chip-in returned again. It got a bit deeper. We actually got a bit deeper to the half-back flank a couple of times. But it's just so monotonous and so predictable that if us unpaid observers of the game can work out what we're doing, then I would hate to think how much detail and opposition analysis is getting into our psyche and what we're trying to do. But yeah, not good.
The kick-out strategy, we heavily protect one side of the field. All the opposition has to do is leave two or three players on the on the other side of the wing, knowing that we're going to turn it over, switch the kick, and they're free. And that's what they've been doing the whole year against us. They've left the two or three players in the middle of the corridor, and they're getting that inside 50. It's disgusting how neutral observers can watch it, but people who are in charge of the club either have identified it and can't fix it or haven't identified it. Either way, they're red flags.
Did you say kicking strategy?
Yeah.
Could you spot a strategy?
Sorry. Yeah. Long to the wing, that's the strategy. It's not a very good one. Definition of insanity, blah, blah, blah. But
what you're saying is right. What you're saying is right. The moment we turn it over, we're completely exposed on that one side, and it's a free-for-all. The amount of times they just walk it straight through the middle. My goodness. Anyway.
And like Carl Amon pretty much camped himself in the middle of the ground, and any time it was turned over, they looked in board, and Amon was sitting there waiting for it, he and maybe a couple of others as well. So our ability to defend those dangerous kicks has disappeared as well. They're just a team that has got no confidence in themselves whatsoever. Like I said, we kicked that first goal and they were up and about, but you just know that all it's taking is for teams to get a couple of back-to-back goals and they've just all dropped their heads. They just have no belief in what they're doing and what the system is and what they're trying to achieve. And we've spoken about it before, that we had the slight feeling that there was a couple of mixed messages from within the coaching box, which has caused a bit of confusion. And maybe it's just been too late to undo all that. But whatever it is that's gone on this off-season, they need to all come together as a collective and work out what the plan is, what the strategy is. Everyone must buy into it. We've got to move forward. We can't start next year with how we ended this year.
The thing for me, it'll be the last negative because there's a couple of positives which were exciting and fun. The thing for me is I can't believe how out of position and how unable we are to set up once we've turned it over. Like, you see most sides when they turn it over, they're able to get back and get some sort of structure in place to block a few lanes and, you know, make it maybe hard. You're always going to get times where the other team gets out the back, but they always seem to get through. I don't know why when we turn it over, our structure does not take shape as fast as what it should. And that's, I don't know whether it's messages or whether it's game plan or what, but anyway. How about Bolton smother and recovery and goal? How good was that? That was gross. Positive.
Yeah.
That was good.
Bowers mark.
Yeah. Actually, Hugo's mark.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
A couple of decent ones.
I got a trivia question. Wait, let me find it. Oh, who do you think is leading the contested marks average per game in the competition? Whole competition. Contested marks per game average. Who's winning it?
Bauer, I'd say.
Bauer is winning it. Off two games, Bauer is winning it. He's averaging three contested marks a game. He's got the rest of the comp covered. He's our boy. That is the silver lining. But in all seriousness, he did take some good hangers. He actually made Sicily look silly at some stages with the marks he was taking. Was very, very good. I would have liked to have seen him. I think he got the kicking yips a little bit. He passed a couple off that I would have liked to have seen him go back and have a shot because he's a beautiful shot for goal. Yep. Like he's won games off his own boot, literally, after the siren on multiple occasions. And even though Bolter had mentioned that if there was someone kicking for goal to save his life, he'd want it to be Bauer. So the kid can kick, and I'd like to see him do it a bit more often. But he's marking a very good highlight. And I know we spoke today, EJ, that we want to see him put on some more size. But it was good to see him hitting the packs hard and actually having an aerial presence.
Yep, yep. He just needs a few more kilos. Eat some more pasta, son. Just if you want to put some weight on, just come to me for advice. I'll help you.
Who else? Oh, Hugo Rollsmith. I know we mentioned him a couple of times. Would he almost be a lock for a most improved player award for us this year?
He'd have to be. I'd say Miller was probably a shoe-in at the halfway point of the season, but Miller's dropped off something shocking in the last 6 weeks, whereas Hugo's just consistently gotten better and better each week. He did have that very quiet game a couple of weeks ago, but that was just an anomaly compared to his last 14, 15 weeks. So, yeah, definitely Hugo, most improved.
So, to horse race, would you agree with that, EJ?
Yeah, and maybe you can throw Mansell in there if you want to, because he hasn't dropped off. But I would put Hugo ahead of Mansell. But, yeah, that would be the couple.
Now, while we're talking about, I suppose, younger players, a few people have made good note in here of Morris Rioli Jr. in the VFL had a very good game. I saw a couple of clips, and while some of the stuff that I saw, you wouldn't deem sexy football, but it was the multiple repeat efforts, that just not giving up and chasing, tackling, harassing. That's the stuff that we desperately need in the ones, and that's exactly what he brings to the table. So I don't know what position he played in the VFL. I must admit I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I'm very, very excited to see those type of reports about his game. So did either of you two catch much of what Rioli was doing?
Yeah, I watched the VFL game, and for a game that should not have been as close as it was, we let Carlton come back something fierce in the second and third quarters and ended up, we needed to win it off our own. He was the difference in that last quarter when the game was there to be won. He was so clean. He would have had probably 3 goal assists in the last 30 minutes of football that was played. He pushed up into the midfield in the second half. I think he had 17 disposals at the end of the game, but it doesn't do justice just how clean he was with the ball. Nearly every kick he had hit a target, and it's not when he first started where they were the little dinky 35 meter ones. These were hard 50 meter bullets hitting chests, lace out, silky. And the one thing that was really good is it seems he's got that pace back. I know there was a time where that sort of dropped off, and maybe he was carrying a little bit of the puppy fat, but his running patterns have really improved this year. His endurance has really improved, and he's got that explosiveness back. So, yeah, he definitely was fantastic. Probably best on ground for me when it came down to it.
So I can't remember who posted this before, but it was a reasonable point that maybe our AFL midfield balance is out of whack again with Taranto and Hopper and whoever else being 2-1 paced. Is there a spot down the track potentially for a Morris Rioli Jr. type to add that explosiveness into the middle?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on record and on the podcast and with you saying that I think he's going to be a cross between a Lambert and a Shedder type player, that impactful clearance slash pressure midfielder who can also go forward and help in that transition. And based on what I saw on the weekend, if he comes in, he's definitely going to add something to the midfield.
Do you reckon, you say you compare him to Lambert. Lambert was elite endurance. Do you reckon he'll ever develop that tank, or do you think he's going to have to be a bit more bursty?
He'll be a bursty, sort of like what Edwards was, where he'd spend some time up forward and then he'd go through the midfield, then rotate out to the flank. He'll be a bit more in that role, but so, yeah.
I would happily roll a dice and put him in there. We just need that explosiveness. We just seem to be 2-1 pace and flat-footed, and it's vital to get that combination right because you saw Hawthorn just literally walked it out of there with zero pressure. At least someone like him in there, you know the bloke with the ball's going to at least hear footsteps of some kind with Morris in there. Which would be good. But
any chance if they're walking it out, clearance after clearance after clearance, that we could maybe put a sweeper in or something? I don't know.
Yeah, just a defensive setup wouldn't go astray. Yeah, and like I don't know how people view it, but I blame the players for that. They're out on the ground. They can clearly see they've just been done 2 or 3 times in a row. They're old enough and mature enough to make that call and go, shit, maybe we should actually put someone behind the ball here and actually try and stem the flow a little bit.
This is where we're feeling Koch's absence, because he was that player at the defensive side of the contest who comes in and shuts down that space. I think we're really... I don't think we groomed a successor for Koch in that role. We've got the accumulators. We've got, obviously, Ross, Graham. You've got the clearances in Hopper, Prestia and Taranto. But we don't have that defensive-minded midfielder who's going to sacrifice, you know, winning the ball to help stop the opposition if they get that quick clearance. We just don't have that at the moment.
No, I was just looking through the list to see who could do it. But, I mean, you would just be hoping for the best with anyone. Oh, Jack Ross might be one that could potentially do it if he was given the task to. But speaking of Jack Ross, what did we make of his return? He had 19 disposals. 4 marks, 4 tackles, 5 clearances, which was third highest on the team, EJ. Yep. Truthfully, it was very hard for me to notice him just from how far away I was sitting and the kids being pains in the ass. But what did it look like from watching the game on TV?
Oh, he looked probably half a run short, you know, like just a little bit off the pace, but he had a crack and he kept going, well, that'll be better for the run. He's not going to, I don't think he'll ever be an elite player, but he'll be a good in that midfield mix. And yeah, I think it'll be good to get another game again. Yes, his hair was great on TV, but he was okay. He certainly wasn't. He was far from our poorest midfielder on the day.
Yeah, he's definitely rusty. Yeah. And he's been killing it at VFL, but as we know, the step up from VFL to AFL in terms of like time and being able to find space is that much quicker and that much more contested. And I think he definitely showed that he didn't have that timing quite down around contest and that breakaway. But I think he had a good game without being great. It's a good average game.
Fair enough. Fletcher, a bit disappointed that we've clipped Matty Coulthard. Oh, look, we've probably given a few clips to a few players as well, but I mean, he only have 7 disposals and he was -1 in meters gained, so it doesn't scream a good day out. I tend to agree that he probably hasn't been given the opportunity that I maybe would have liked to have seen before an official decision's made. But I don't know whether he shot lights at a VFL level either. I had high hopes for him, but yeah, it just seems like from the small window we've seen that he's shown to have a lot of the skills at VFL level, but then translating into AFL is maybe a bit more difficult. Having said that, anyone coming into this team currently is going to struggle because there's just no confidence, no nothing. So on that front, it's probably harsh to cast an overall judgment, and all we can go by is the stats and what we see for those given games, I suppose. But I would like to see more of him. I would like to have seen him earlier on this year, but I think he might have copped an injury earlier on during the year.
My criticism with Coulthard is comparing him to others in that position. You look at Campbell, you look at Ralph Smith, you look at Mansell and their contributions to the side, and then you look at what Coulthard's done in both of his games at AFL level, and I think he's definitely third or fourth in line in the pack. Based on what we saw at AFL level, he won't play next week, but Morris probably comes in. I'd be surprised if Coulthard's on the list next year, and that's no knock on Coulthard. I just think with his traits, I think we've got a lot of depth in that position now as that forward flanker type who can push up to the wing. And yeah, I definitely think he's fallen down a little bit in that regard.
I think it would be easier for him if we were a better side.
For sure.
That we can maybe carry him a bit and let him develop, and it's not his fault that we're not in that position at the moment.
Yep.
Yeah, especially because players in his position aren't natural accumulators. Like, that's kind of not what their role is. But at the same time, we're actually not also giving them their opportunity to showcase their skill, because we can't get in the forward half with any sort of, proper thought or meaningful entry. So he's kind of had his hands tied behind his back a little bit in that sense. But
you also need to look at it from a list management point of view. We've got so many picks and we really want to invest in the draft. There are going to be some unlucky players that get the chop at the end of the year.
A few people asking other questions about play, so we may as well just answer a few of these. From Nick, does Dow have a future?
I'm undecided on this one.
Yes, for me, because he's offers something different to what the other three do. He's actually got some awareness in traffic, and he's got a little bit of toe about him. He's not quick, but he's not as slow as Prestia, Taranto, and Hopper.
For me, I just wonder whether the Dow family are slow maturers. Like, Paddy didn't make it at Carlton, but he's a serviceable C-plus grade list player at St Kilda. Is it just the only thing that for me with Thompson would be, do we give him one more year because there's that late maturity with, like, with his brother? If I hadn't seen his brother go before him, I would probably say your time's up. But the other thing is that if you think at who we've got going out, you know, Grimes out, Naismith out, Dusty out, probability of Cumberland out, although that has been, I've heard something maybe that he might be getting a one-year lifeline. But we're going to lose a couple to, it looks like, trades, etc. That's a lot to lose. That might be the saving grace, is where you have those players that are depth players and that won't play every game, but they will round out the list for that extra 12 months, 24 months.
Yeah, I mean, like it or not, right now with the list profile, Dow is in our top 25. If one of Hopper or Prestia or Taranto get injured, he's the first one in to cover for them. So I don't think we can afford to cut him at the end of this year. I think next year, once we get those draftees in and McCall has got another season under his belt, that's when the decision gets made based on how McAuliffe develops next year, how O'Sullivan or Smith or whoever has developed as well. That's when the call gets made. But, yeah, I think Dow right now is definitely on the list in 2025.
I'm on record as saying I like him, and I don't know if people, I suppose, had higher expectations of him this year, but he was thrust into a role that he is not made, like, ready or built to do as the number one or number two mid. I think I would like to see him play as a genuine third midfielder in a fully fit team to see if he can actually help the other people plays around him, because he actually can extract the ball. I don't care if he doesn't kick the footy. If he can handball it out to the guys who can kick it, that's a tick for me. If he does that 13 times and we get 13 inside 50s from another bloke, that's a win. And I want to see if that's something that can work, because he's not as slow as the other two. Probably needs to put on a bit more size, but I wouldn't mind wanting to see how that eventuates before I'd make a final decision on him. His hands in traffic is actually quite good.
All right, I'll make a comparison. I'll ask a question here. I mean, I know it upsets a lot of people that we're talking about Dow being there next year, but the reality is that the way that it looks like it's going to be cut, it's a necessity. But I'll ask the question, how many people were ready to get rid of Ross 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, and then he turns it around in the preseason, and all of a sudden everyone's screaming for him to come back from injury.
Yeah, and as I said, he's not going to be elite, he's not going to be an A grader, but he's going to be a very serviceable BB minus midfielder for a lot of years. You can't have 23 A graders on the field at the same time. You need good, even, regular contributors, and Ross is now one of those. That's all the step up needs to be.
Yeah, agree. What about Jacob Blight? What do we make of his game? He was, look, it's playing on Gunston. Even though Gunston's on the older side, he's still obviously very good at what he does. So it was a bit of a tough day at the office for Blight, but he got his hand on a few times, got a couple of nice spoils in. I was kind of still a bit bummed that we dropped him in the first place, to be honest. I'd still like to see a bit more of him. And I think with his size and attack on the ball, I think he's something we definitely persevere with.
Yeah, absolutely. And there have been whispers in WA that West Coast have looked at Blight hard, but he's still contracted. Obviously, West Coast are losing Barris at the end of the year, and they've earmarked Blight as a potentially cheap replacement. But yeah, I think going back to VFL helped him. I think it gave us a chance to see what Bolter was like back down the other end as well. But obviously, if Blight's in, Bolter's up forward. You can't have the two in the same side. I definitely think, Blight's a ripper. And for him, he would probably be better if he did play those five or six games, if he than being dropped. But yeah, I definitely think his marking, while he's a decent mark, that he still spills a few too many, and he still needs to get used to the AFL level defending. His man's getting lost a little bit easy, slipping around the back and out the other side. So he still needs to work on that. But I think he's definitely, for a first year key defender, he's definitely shown some promising signs.
This might be an outrageous call, EJ, but I reckon that Blight and Bolter can play in the same back line, but it might mean Miller gets shuffled elsewhere. But Blight could be the Asprey to Bolter being Rance.
Yeah. Although with a name like Blight, why don't we try and forward? It worked 40 years ago. Yeah, Blight and Bolter can definitely work together. And we've got a couple of other backs that will come back next year in Gipkus and maybe a little bit later for Young. So if Gipkus stays fit, our game changes straight away. Like, he is very, very highly rated. He's a freak athletically. And we've got Bolter and Vlosten getting on in age but hanging around. Gipkus can be more of that moving defender if Blight is there playing the Asprey role. I see it. I do see it. And he's actually quite athletic, Blight.
Yeah. And then you've got Trezise there. Like, imagine our backline next year in terms of, like, intercepting prowess. If you've got Bolter, Blight, you've got Gipkus, you've got Vlosten, and you've got Trezise. It's going to be extremely hard for sides to put it in the air and take a mark. That's some serious overhead marking ability.
Yeah, and yeah, there's going to be some deck chair shuffled, and yeah, Gipkus coming back is the unknown, isn't it? Like, he obviously will come back, but will he stay in the side? I don't know. He makes a hell of a lot of difference if he can keep himself on the park, but we will have to see how that one pans out.
Blight's had a contract.
Yeah, it was only a 6-month deal, but there's one in the pipeline getting sorted now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I thought he was on the longer one, but okay, so he's on the 6.
No, I think Gray was the one that did the 18-month.
No, Gray's this year as well. I brought the contract status up while we were chatting.
I thought one of them was 18 months.
No, well, not according to Footy Wire. We've got Gray. We've got a stack finishing up this year. Anyway. Yeah.
Okay.
Liam Fawcett was 25.
Yeah.
Right, okay. All right, well, there was obviously some interesting news that came out today with, firstly, I think it was John Ralph went with Bolton had informed the club that he wishes to be traded back home to WA. Then maybe an hour or two later, both the club and Bolton's manager come out and said that no discussions or no decisions have been made of that nature. I kind of feel like that's being a bit polite, just given we're still in season. I think the writing's definitely on the wall. It's, you know, we all know it's family reasons and it is what it is. But we have to work off the assumption that that is the conversation that will take place, I think. Would that be a fair call? I can't see it not panning out that way.
Yeah. My code is, and as I said, since about May, Bolton is gone. The fact that he hasn't requested a trade is working out whether a trade can be done. Because obviously if a trade can't be done and a fair compensation given up by Freo for us, he's got to stay. And I think that's the key sticking point in that he hasn't officially requested a trade, but he has told the club he's interested in exploring it. It's just whether or not a trade can be facilitated. Because if it's not, there's no point in him officially declaring he wants a trade if one cannot be sorted.
Okay, so it's more about us speaking to Fremantle off the book, yep, saying, look, if you're prepared to offer X, Y, and Z, we're happy to talk, but otherwise don't bother flagging your interest because it's not going to happen. Because it can be pretty awkward. Like, if you say that, come out and say, I want to trade, and it doesn't happen. To have to walk back with your tail between your legs, I know it's a professional environment, but it would still be an awful feeling.
I mean, we only have to look at CB's boy, what happened to Rory Lobb a couple of years ago where he requested a trade back to GWS and it didn't eventuate. Like, yeah, it's an awkward position for both club and player when you know that a player's wanted out and a trade hasn't been able to be formulated. It's an awkward situation all around when you know that someone's not 100% committed.
And the other thing I'll say, EJ, on the hypothetical that this is all true, it's definitely more palatable and easier to take when they say, I want to go home to play in WA. He's not saying, I want to go to West Coast.
Yeah.
That's always been my gripe. Not even Richmond specific, but any club any player's under contract, if you want to go home, that's fine. But clubs should be able to then pick the best deal in that state and whatever it is, it is. So at least it's not playing out that way, which is a good thing because it looks like for all intents and purposes, Fremantle will be the obvious one that he will go to. And there was a comment before about why Gunplay's wanting out. Family reasons. Paulie wants to go home to be closer to his family. And I don't think anyone should ever begrudge a player who wants to do that. He's given us a lot of joy over the years and he's got a young family now and that has to be at the forefront of his mind too. So I definitely don't hold that against him for doing that.
Yeah, I heard some stuff as to why.
Same.
And to add to what I heard, his partner Izzy is pregnant again as well. So, Rioli, the jungle drums are starting to beat louder and louder. That is the one that I'm probably a little bit grumpy about. I'm not actually grumpy about Bolton at all because if I don't have any reason to not believe what I've been told and it makes sense to me and I really understand it, but Rioli is the one that gets me grumbly.
Yeah.
Yeah, agree. Because all the murmurs now are that apparently the club are aware of Rioli's intentions to flag Gold Coast as being the club of interest that he wants to get to next year. And again, Grok, it could be a similar situation that there still has to be something that we can broker first before anything comes of it.
Yeah, Noah Anderson, thanks.
Noah Anderson, straight out.
I'm with EJ in that Rioli definitely hurts. Because we've heard, you know, I want to play with my unc and I want to do this and Richmond, you know, is in my blood and all of this. And then all of a sudden Dimmer goes up to the Gold Coast and 12 months later, you know, we're on the slide and then Rioli wants out and Dimmer's come calling. I think optically, I don't think it's a great look for either Rioli or Dimmer. But at the same time, Rioli's won... what, three flags now? No, he missed, yeah, three flags. Yeah. I thought he missed 2017 because of the thing, but no, he played and was getting carried around. But, like, yeah, three flags. He's, what, 27, 28. But it's also you got to look at his fiancée. That's the influence there as well. She loves the Gold Coast. She wants to move up there. So he's got to look at his family as well. But... On the plus side, if he does go, that frees up 17 for Morris. I think that'd be something positive that at least comes out of it if it does eventuate.
Luana, it's getting very, very solid. When someone like Cal Twomey goes with it, I rate him and respect his views quite a lot compared to a lot of other journos. And when he starts to catch wind of that, and a few other people that we obviously know in the areas as well have sort of said the same thing, but... Gold Coast have picks 5, 13 and 20, EJ. Some of them might look a little bit appealing.
Yep.
Starting point's 5. It has to be one of the...
Well, he's under contract and he's not out of contract till 2028. So the ball is firmly in our court. And if they really want him, they have to pay. We have to stick to our guns here because he's got a contract. So, and just on this whole thing, the conversation about... Rioli and the Wantaway and all that sort of stuff. Did you catch Nathan Broad on the Triple M podcast with Dale Thomas?
About why he stayed?
Yeah, he said, you know, like, I would still be a plumber if it wasn't for Richmond, right? They picked me up at 22. No one else wanted me. And he goes, he had a three-year offer at age 31 on the table from North Melbourne, and he knocked it back, and he signed for two with Richmond, and he goes, it doesn't sit right with me. It's not who I am. How could I walk out on the club when, after winning three flags, just because things have got a little bit tough? I've got to be the person here to lead the charge. And I thought that was bloody magnificent.
Yeah, because looking at it, Grimes is likely gone at the end of the year. So who does that leave to mentor players like Trezise and Gibkiss? It's up to Broad and Vlosten,
yep,
as the leaders in that back line. It's the two. And like fair play to Broad. He could have easily taken that easy paycheck, gone to North, been in a similar position at Richmond. But again, what's an extra year worth a couple of hundred grand more when you've got to forge new relationships and you know, all those new game plan, new environment, lower supporter base, no offense, not getting to play at the MCG. Like, there's so many other factors that would have played into it. So, yeah, fair play for Brody, absolute legend.
I wondered this too, Julie, if it was a sort of subtle message for Baker as well, that who was also overlooked. I think Brody also said somewhere that the longer that the Baker one doesn't have an answer for, he reckons the better it is that he's going to stay. But hopefully he's right. But no, super respect for Brody. He could have quite easily taken a bit more security at the Kangaroos, but to show that sort of maturity is unbelievably good. And like we sort of said the other week, that some of these older players now, their roles within this side have now changed. They're now not the elite ball winners or the elite players of the club. It's now their job to be the mentors and the teachers of the younger kids coming up to set us up for the next tilt. So if they can understand and accept the new role, then, you know, they're worth their weight in gold. But that's definitely good for Broad. But back to the Rioli one, if we're saying five's the starting point, I don't think they'll give us 5 and 13. I think they'll tell us to bugger off. Would 5 and 20 be as acceptable?
Yeah, I think we could ask for 13 if we give them something back, depending on what we potentially get from Frio out of Bolton.
And it's hard. Like, I've seen obviously a lot of comments come through saying we shouldn't get rid of Rioli under any circumstance, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. But there is also a part of me that probably acknowledges that realistically he's not going to be part of our next premiership side. So do we take the opportunity that's presented to try and get players in to build for that next premiership, as much as it would hurt to see him play for Gold Coast? I suppose that's just where part of my mindset is. Same with Bolton, but obviously family reasons, more than happy for that to play out. A few people asking about Baker. Teague hadn't really changed his messaging today. I didn't really ask him about that. I was more asking how he was because he got a bad migraine, but someone else, I won't say the person is unless they want me to in the chat, but they did mention that they had heard that a couple of days ago that Baker maybe had a change of mind to leave. So that he's saying that his intention was to stay, but maybe in the last couple of days, this person's heard that that's actually flipped, which would then actually ironically line up with what Tiggs was saying all along, that he was at that point in time still staying, but if something changed in the last couple of days, then we'll have to wait and see how it all pans out. But that's a real doozy.
Yeah, my mail still from what I'm hearing, and I heard from mine yesterday after the game. He sent me a message saying he didn't have enough beer to get through that game, so he had to turn it off. But yeah, he's still firmly in the camp that Baker's gone.
I think I got the same message as you, Michaels.
Yes. Possibly, yeah. Yes. So, yeah, it's just, I mean, that one's just, I watch this space, but what makes it interesting is, like, if we're going on the assumption that Bolton's going to Fremantle, so we're looking at either picks 9, 10 or 17, like a combination of those three picks, I dare say, for Bolton. If Baker is to go, then that leaves, like, three of those picks could be gone. So they'll be looking at 26, 62, and West Coast have only got 3, 23, and 59, and they're not giving us pick 3. It might actually be a bit more difficult for it to be facilitated if the Bolton one gets done first.
Yeah.
So that's the other interesting set of circumstances. But, yeah, we'll have to just watch this space and see where. And yeah, true. Future. That's a good call, Tiger Pop. Future picks. I probably did forget about that. Future picks is a good call too. So we'll have to see where that how that lands, or a 3 or 4 team. Yeah, trade. Oh, Barras. Yeah, true. They'll get something for Barras as well. But either way, it's going to be a big off season for us in the trade area. Much better than previous years. We waited to pick 45 or 50 to do something, and then we bid it on people or passed.
Pick 40 and everything. Well,
and I'm saying if here, if Bolton, Baker, and Rioli all hand in their papers, it's a real chance to just blow it all up.
It's a generational thing if we get this right. Yeah. Based on the trades and the income that we could potentially get for them, this could be a generational thing.
Yeah. Yep.
As my mate Herbert said, bomb the list. He wants a big clean out.
And the other thing about this, right, is Bolton's on he's on about a mil.
Yep.
Dusty was on 1.2. Grimes, as a leader, was on a little bit extra than what he would normally be. We are probably going to struggle to pay minimum cap space. So we're actually going to be banking a little bit as well. Tiger Pop, probably. I don't know, Grok, you can probably clean that one up. He has an offer. He has two offers, and he's having a think, and he's going to choose. That's where I have heard that it's at.
Yep. So obviously it came out that West Coast are interested. There's been that smoke for the best part of two months now. I've heard it's still 50-50. The clubs approached Graham and said that there's no guarantee that he'll be playing more than 14 games next season. They want to develop, obviously, the younger boys we get in the draft. So they've encouraged Graham to seek opportunities elsewhere. So...
Yeah.
I mean, and if Graham goes, we're not going to get much. It'll be like a Brandon Ellis type trade where we'll send him the best
in the second round.
Yeah, it'll be a token pick, probably a second or even third rounder with his injury history, and we'd take it.
No, I don't RFC Centre. I don't know how we come to the conclusion that Graham's compo pick is 21 if he goes.
I think
the formula isn't. Because allegedly it's a multi-year deal or whatever, the dollars trigger the value of the pick. And we all know it's a secret source at AFL House, but I can't see Graham being offered a contract that triggers an end of first, start of second round pick.
Yeah.
I can only see it being end of second round at best.
It'd be the similar compo to what we got for Brandon Ellis, who was in a very similar situation.
He was pick 30 something.
Yeah. End of second round.
Yeah,
it'll be Well, and there's gonna be a lot of changes, isn't there? A lot of changes. What else do I see in here? Yeah, so someone mentioned Graham needs to be on like 700k plus, which is not gonna happen. He's not gonna be getting that kind of money, I wouldn't have thought, no matter where he played.
David Harris is saying it's definitely pick 21. All right. Well, if so, will we bloody take it straight up? I mean, that's not even a debate. If you've got the mail that's the guaranteed pick, I'll drive him to the airport. and he's been my pinned tweet since 2017. I love it.
Yeah, exactly right. I think that's about it from the trade front. There's just a lot of moving parts to this, so we'll obviously do some more trade stuff as it gets closer to trade time. We actually might even still be doing shows during the finals series to talk about the finals for anyone who cares. But yeah, we'll see how that plays out as well. But we do have a game coming up this week against the Gold Coast Suns, the final game for the season for us and for them. And more importantly, it's a chance to say a proper farewell to Dusty, who will be doing a lap of honour, I believe. I'm not sure if it's at the start or at the end or when it's happening. Someone else might know. But, obviously very important occasion to make sure we get along to the game to see off the great man, which will be hopefully equally as loud as what the Hawthorn game was for his 300th. it's going to be an interesting game because we know that the Gold Coast have struggled. I don't think they've won away all year.
Yeah, they've been one.
That's right. They beat Essendon. they're probably a good chance to get their second away win this week. But how do we see this one playing out? Now, we can still afford to win a game and still finish last and get the number one pick if we want that. I'd love to see us put up a much bigger fight for this one than we did last week against the Hawks.
I mean, yes, potentially we could, but there's only 3% difference between us. So if we get the win, there's a high likelihood that North Melbourne gets smashed based on what they dished up this week. And if that's the case, they'll end up with pick one if we win. So, I mean, I thoroughly expect Gold Coast to get the job done. I just want to see us be competitive. Like that game against Hawthorn was horrible. It was a really poor look. I don't want to see that again. I mean, given that it's a farewell game for Dusty, you want to see some heart. Even if it is, you know, getting into Gold Coast, roughing them up a little bit, show that you actually care. End the season on a positive note. Even if you don't get the win, just show some fight.
Beat their new toys, EJ. How do you reckon we'll go against the Suns? They've still got some good quality young players, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I reckon we'll be competitive for 2.5 quarters and then fade.
And then fade, yes.
I'm getting a couple of interesting messages, I've got to say. About free agency next year. They're popping up into my feed as we go. I'll have a more of a chat, but the two names are pretty good.
Pretty good, okay.
Yes. Doozies.
Sorry?
They're doozies.
Yeah, we'll announce them at 10:20 a.m. Yes, yes.
10:20.
It's happening.
Oh, shit.
Oh, when we finally landed the doozy, how good was that?
Yeah, I know. But Gold Coast game, I don't foresee us winning, but like similar to you, Grok, I just want to see a stronger effort in the contest for four quarters. And sort of to what you said as well earlier, EJ, that if all 22 players who play this week can play with the intensity of a Ryan Mansell, I'd be happy. I can handle with the turnovers. If someone's taking on a risky kick and it doesn't come off because we're attacking and trying to make something happen, that's okay. It's just when we do the basics wrong, when we're trying to defend or just chip it around aimlessly, that it's really, really annoying. So hopefully we see a bit more of a fired upside this week. I don't think they will have been happy with how that first quarter unfolded. Keen to see a good showing for the last game. But who do you reckon comes in? Do we put Maurice Rioli in, given he had a pretty good game in the VFL? Do you just roll him in there for the last game? Or do we need him to play this week for our VFL team?
I mean, given that if the expectation is that Daniel's gone, bring Maurice in, give him one last game together as that sort of farewell to him as well. And Kylie did put in a decent point as well. It's also Gail's last game as well at the club before he leaves as well. So there's plenty of stories there. I definitely think MJ should come in, even if it is for Coulthard or Banks or one of the two. I definitely think Junior comes in. I think he should get the legs in as well. VFL, we've made the wild card spot. So there's also that there. So it's an interesting call.
The tail, if you ever want to speak to me again, get those filthy names out of my PM, please. he's not Lobb and Burn Jones.
Yeah.
I'm starting to wonder if the tail is really CB17.
Yeah. Well, we've seen him in the same room together. Dusty's presentation before the game. Okay. Well, either way, whenever it is, obviously make sure you're extremely loud and get around him.
Yeah. He's not going to stick around and watch that shit.
he'd be out the door straight to the airport with Swanee off to Vegas, I reckon. But, no, hopefully we see a better turnout. I would like to see Rioli Jr. come in and have a red hot crack for the last game, given his his VFL performance, but we'll see how that goes. And Bauer, I'd love to see Bauer take a few more big grabs, but I want to see him kick some goals. I want to see him actually back himself. This is going to be an interesting one. Technically speaking, Baker is available because he's exited concussion protocol. That will be a fascinating watch to see if he is selected to play.
If not, you just know that the conspiracies will be all over Twitter. I think if Baker's in, Baker has to play. Like he, you know that he's going to want to play for Dusty. Like, yeah, it'd be a case of trying not to get him to run onto the field, even if he isn't named.
Oh, this is a good question as well from Uncle. What are our thoughts on Carousella being relinked back to potentially joining us again next year?
From what I've heard, it's all but sorted. He will be at the Tigers next year.
And how do we feel about that if that is what eventuates?
I'm stoked. Apparently he was one of the mans behind the brain that was Dimmer, the master coach. So, I mean, it's no coincidence that when he's left, the club's... I mean, he left at the end of 2022 and you saw what 2023 and 2024 have looked like.
EJ, you happy with the Carousella potentially coming back?
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything that adds quality to our coaching ranks at the moment is more than welcome.
anything that makes Essendon worse too.
Yes, well, yes. You know, it's a double-edged sword. That's pretty good. Although they seem to be doing a pretty good job of sabotaging themselves. he's obviously quality. And, you know, when Uze falls on his sword, Carousella can finally get his head coaching gig.
Jones asked, any update on the CEO? There's been murmurs about Graham Wright, I believe. But I don't know much else about it, to be totally honest. So that could be a watch this space. But I dare say the club will be looking to get on the front foot here and announce something ASAP, I would imagine. They've had long enough to get it sorted. But
Someone posted in chat that it's going to be an internal promotion. Yes. So it won't be a...
Between Gunn and Matthews.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I have no word on the CEO at all.
Well, we'll just wait and see how that one plays out. But anyway, that is a wrap for tonight. Like I said, we are considering doing some finals shows as well. Still same Monday night thing. I know obviously that won't appeal to everybody because, you know, we're all Richmond supporters here. And once the Tigers are done, sometimes we just all check out and go on holiday, which is fine too. But for anyone who is keen, we will run some type of final show and talk about the games that are on. Could be a bit of banter involved as well. We might slap a few clubs along the way. We'll see how it goes. Oh, this is a good call. Before we wrap up, get Jimmy Bartel in. I like that deal. I wouldn't mind that. He seems like a very good operator who's just finished up at the Giants. I would love to see that happen. That would be a very good get.
Yeah, I agree. And he was a Tiger supporter growing up too. So
was he really?
I heard he had a Delilio poster on his wall.
There it is.
No, he's grew up in Belpo, still in Geelong, and was a massive Tigers fan. So.
Ah. There we go. And a few people have asked about the draft show with Cameron Hicks coming up. That will be, it's in October. I'm going to say it's the 21st or the 27th. I can't remember the date. We did land on a date. I just can't remember off the top of my head. So I will post about that shortly. But we will do a draft special because there's going to be quite a bit of work for Cameron on that show, given the picks that we should have at our disposal, which would be 21st. Thank you, Cameron. There we go, 21st. So 21st of October, we will do that. We'll obviously do some other trade stuff as well, closer to trade time when Tiggs has more news. He did say that he was going to talk to his mates before coming onto the show next week because he wants to come on next week being a wrap-up of the season, I guess, for Richmond. So he might have some more stuff then if it isn't already out in the media world. But anyway, that is it for tonight, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. Appreciate the love and support. Make sure you get around us on YouTube. We're almost at 900 subscribers. So thank you for the love and support there. We're obviously on Twitter and Facebook and everything else. So EJ and Grok, thank you so much for your time tonight, gents. Hopefully Groupie treats you well, EJ, once you turn the Wi-Fi off. And we'll hopefully get to see you again soon.
Very good. Go Tigers.
That's it. Until next time, go Tigers. One more game to go. Come on, boys. Let's just put up a good performance. Yeah. Go Tigers.
And get there on Saturday.
Get there for Dusty's farewell. And if you see us, come and say hi. Unless we're losing. We don't